Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 16-year-old Juan De Leon Gutierrez made the dangerous journey from Guatemala to the United States on his own. On April 30th, he died in U.S. custody. He was the third immigrant child to die in the custody of United States officials since December, when 7-year-old Jacqueline Call McQueen and 8-year-old Felipe Gomez Alonso both died after falling ill in the custody of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. More than 8,900 unaccompanied children were apprehended by Border Patrol in March, according to the New York Times. That's nearly twice the number seen in October. As of late March, BuzzFeed reports around 32,000 unaccompanied children had been referred to the Office of Refugee Resettlement for custody. For young people making their way to the United States, the journey comes at a very steep cost, both physical and financial. It often involves debts or large payments to coyotes. It could involve hitching a ride on a massive freight train known as the Beast, or being given drugs to persevere through days of trekking through the desert, or being detained in a holding cell kept so cold it is known as the icebox. In a new Voice of Witness collection, Solito Solita, which means alone, alone, 15 young people who made the journey from Central America to the United States tell their stories in their own words. And today, the book's co-editor and a narrator return to Your Call to talk about what young people face on their way to the United States and what happens after they arrive. Jonathan Friedman is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author, and mentor with more than 30 years' experience reporting from Central America, Mexico, and the U.S. border. He is co-editor of this incredible book, Solito Solita, Crossing Borders with Youth Refugees from Central America. Hi, Jonathan. Thank you for coming back.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you. Soledad Castillo is a graduate of San Francisco State University. She is originally from Tegucigalpa, Honduras. Soledad crossed the border at age 14. And in the book, Solito Solita, Soledad's story is the first. And there's a beautiful drawn photograph of Soledad also in the book, along with the other 14 young people. Hi, Soledad. Thank you for coming in again.
Thank you for inviting us again.
It's great to see both of you. I want to start off by asking you, since you were on the show a couple of months ago, I understand that you've done some traveling and talks. And what has that been like for you, Soledad, to tell your story, which is pretty intense, and we'll talk about some of it today, to audiences across the country?
It's been amazing. We just came back from New York. We were there for a week. We had several events. One of the main ones was the PEN World Conference. There were like around 120 people there. So it was amazing to have a big audience and people actually listening, you know, to the story. So it's been a really great experience.
Well, what do you hear from people after you tell your story?
You know, throughout all our books presentations, I hear people coming to me thanking me for a speak up, because, you know, some of the topics that I talked are about, you know, people going through sexual abuse, the things that I went through. And many people go through the same thing too, but they don't feel like that courage to share it, you know, and when they hear someone just speaking up, so they feel like, oh, I'm not alone. There's other people going through the same too. Yeah.
Jonathan, what's this experience been like for you traveling with young people and really elevating their voices, right? They're telling their own stories, which is one thing I love about the book.
Yeah. When Soledad talks, for example, at the PEN World Voices conference in New York City, people are just sitting there silent. And then as you look around the audience, you see these tears going down people's faces. And at the same time, one's heart is pumping because you feel the courage not only to have done and endured and survived and now thriving, but the courage to tell her story. And I remember the first time my co-editor, Stephen Mayers, and I interviewed Soledad in her new apartment that she had just gotten through as a scholarship at City College. How you sat down and We had no idea, neither Stephen nor I, although both of us had taught you in one way or another, what had happened to you. And when you began to tell us about your early childhood, we were just stunned. And that's why we begin the book with your story, because it really tells from the very beginning what's happening to children, aside from politics, what's happening to children.
Soledad, had you told anyone else your story in detail up until that point?
No, that was my first time, and it feels good. It was hard, you know, like letting other people know about all my life, but I have so much inside of me that I want to tell. I have so much pain, and having someone there listening to you, that really helped a lot. And we never had that in my home, you know, never. And my family, we are not used to, like, to sit at a table and ask how you're doing, what is going on. So I never had that. And for me, so I had all the things that happened to me inside of me. And it was, like, you know, haunting me. And when I found then, that was my opportunity, you know, to let go all of that and choose to feel like, oh, okay, I feel good, you know, someone listening to me. And, you know, and I listened to that, and it felt good.
When you give talks at these events, what is your main goal when you decide what part of your story to share?
Yeah, so my main goal is, you know, to let people know that, you know, we talk about immigration as a political thing, you know, which is, but we forget about humans, you know, that we're humans. So my first point when I go to the conference talk is my goal is for people to humanize us, to not only see like, oh my God, we're inviting other country, but why we're coming, why are we fleeing our country, why we decide to leave our children or to leave our families behind. So my goal is for people to know a little bit, to get educated a little bit more about the reasons of why there's tons of people immigrating.
And everyone has a story. That's what I love about the book, mm-hmm. is this, the depth that all of you go into. And luckily, we have time on the show. And I'll, before I ask you, though, what is it like for you to tell it over and over again?
It's therapeutic, you know. Mm-hmm. It can be hard because it brings you trauma, you know. It brings you memories. All your childhood, but all the things that happen. But at the same time, it's like we have different audience. Sometimes we have young people. Sometimes we have different. So it's good. It just remind me who I am, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm.
Well, and I also should let listeners know that some of what we are going to share and talk about today, you know, might be a little triggering for people. I think it's important to note that. And before we dive into Soledad's story, Jonathan, overall, you and Stephen spoke to 15 young people and really got pretty deep talking about what they've gone through and why they decided to flee on their own.
We actually spoke to dozens of people, both in this country and in Casa Migrantes in Mexico. And so we winnowed those down for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, when you're talking to children, you have to make sure that they're okay, and you have to get permission. And so some of the people we talked to, we were not able to get permission. Their parents were not around, things like that. But when you're in a situation with a child, a young person or a teenager, you have to be very careful to listen and to begin in some sort of basis in the present or something like that before delving into the past and establish a sense of trust. Many of our interviews with the 15 that are published were done not just once or twice or three times, but many times over long periods of time. Others were just caught on the fly when people were in transit in Mexico.
Jonathan Friedman is co-editor of Solido Solida, which means alone, alone, crossing borders with youth refugees from Central America. Soledad Castillo is a graduate of San Francisco State University. She's originally from Tegucigalpa, Honduras, and she crossed the border at age 14. When you were on the show last time around, you shared some of your story. But for listeners who may not have heard that or didn't remember that did not remember the interview, let's talk a little bit about your childhood in Guatemala. You talk about
Honduras.
Honduras. Thank you. You talk about having to work at a very young age for a relative of your abusive stepfather, who barely did enough to keep you alive. Can you talk about some of that?
Yes. So my parents got divorced when I was born. So my mom got married to my stepfather, but my mom was a housekeeper, and it wasn't enough for us to. It wasn't enough for all of us to maintain all of us. So my grandmother was the one who raised us, me and my other sisters. But sadly, she passed away when I was 10. After my grandmother passed away, my stepfather sexually and physically abused me. And at that age, I was 10 years old. And, as a little girl, I went to my mom, and I let her know everything that happened with me and my stepfather, but she didn't believe me. So can you imagine for a little girl, like, looking for support for your mom and asking you, to help you and to... So I wasn't expecting me, the one who has to leave the house. So my mom packed all my clothes and sent me to the relatives, my stepfather relatives, to work in the city. I was washing clothes, taking care of kids in order to have a plate of food to eat.
And so you didn't have any outlet to get help after that abuse happened?
No. And until now, we don't choose our parents. And I love my mom, but until now in my age, it's been already like more than 10 years, and it still haunts me. And why, mom? Why you didn't defend me? And I think that's the question that always when I present, that's the question that I always ask myself after I present. I was like, wow, if she was my mom, I would do everything. I'm not a mom, but I would do everything for my child.
Mm. Have you ever asked her that?
It's hard. It's hard because when I go back to Honduras, everyone acts like nothing happened. And that's even worse for me. Yeah. Having them to act like, nothing happened. And the next day, everyone was acting normal. And since now, I feel that I was the only affected in this situation. And people... even when I go to Honduras, people want me to have a good relationship with him. And my mind is like, how can I do that? And, it's hard, And it's hard to talk about it when they don't even make the initiative, And, yeah.
Are there many or any resources where you're from, Soledad, for young people who are abused?
Do you know what is the sad thing? That sexual abuse in Honduras is so normal that it's really sad, but those type of things happen every day. And because the society has so normalized it, that people think that it's okay. And we don't have resources. We don't have outside resources, and we don't have our help, our family as well. So for many people going through the same, it's just they never speak up. I spoke up because I have people encourage me. But if it wasn't for that, I would be here in silence without telling my story.
Mm. Jonathan, a number of people that you feature in the book talk about abuse.
Yes, they do. And this abuse is, I'm speaking now as the co-editor, not having gone through this myself. But when you begin to hear these stories over and over again, It's not just abuse, physical or sexual. It's also there's terrible abuse going on outside the house. Mm. When people are walking, even in their close neighborhoods, they're seeing bodies. They're seeing the gangs shooting people. They're also seeing the military, which is repressing the gangs, committing atrocities. And the abuse goes on so many levels, and it's not just what's wrong with these people in this country. The abuse is related to a kind of abusive relationship between the United States and these very poor neighbors. The United States engaged in the Cold War was fighting against communism. And the United States was very afraid of communism spreading to Latin America, beginning in Cuba, and then spreading through Central America and South America. Now, I think that that was highly, highly exaggerated, but the response was very, very cruel. And in all of the three countries that this book is about, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, the interventions were very, very terrible. We were Soledad and I were just talking about guns. Why are there so many guns in these countries? Well, they came with the wars. They came with the U.S. arming like peasants in Nicaragua who are called the Contras to fight against the Sandinista regime. Those guns have remained. And there are so many guns, and it's devolved to such young people armed with guns committing a lot of the atrocities. It's not just old people doing this. It's 13-year-olds with guns.
What do you think about that, Soledad?
Yeah, I mean, when I was in Honduras, we live in a small town, you know, there were not that many gun violence by then. But if you go to the city, you have to go only during the day. If people are walking with guns like nothing, there's no like gun control there. And you go to the mercado to buy your groceries for the weekend, but you don't know if you're gonna come back. Wow. Because the you know, it's so dangerous that you have to be with someone, you know, with a guy next to you, like, too. But for women, it's even worse, the situation there when it comes to violence, gun violence.
Soledad Castillo tells her story and why she decided to leave Tegucigalpa, Honduras, when she was just 14. She is a graduate of San Francisco State University, and you can read more about her story in Solido, Solida, Crossing Borders with Youth Refugees from Central America. It's co-edited by Jonathan Friedman. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. If you work with young refugees, what knowledge would you like to share about what their needs are and how they've been treated in the United States? If you have a story yourself, if you or someone in your family was a young refugee who came to the United States, what was their journey like? And when we specifically talk about young people from Central America, I mean, we know the kind of information we're getting from this White House. And Soledad says it is so incredibly important to put a face on these stories because everybody has a story. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. You know, I wonder, Soledad, you know, in the United States, we're having this big conversation about sexual violence, assault, rape, what have you, how to treat, you know, relationships between men and women and what women go through. I mean, so much is going on right now. And we had another young woman on from El Salvador who came to the United States by herself. And she said she did it because her father expected her. Well, he pulled her out of school when she was 11 and he was going to marry her off at 16. And so her fate would be to marry someone and have kids. And that's it. And she said, I just wanted a different life. So what are your thoughts about what it will take to start to change that, to give women, you know, more rights so you don't have to come to a point of actually leaving the country to create your own path?
When it comes to where we come from, like, there's a lot of machismo, you know, and the guys decide what you have to do. For example, my stepfather never let her work outside of the house. She has, the only work that she was supposed to do was housekeeping. And we grew up in that mentality. And we are so, you know, so tied that we cannot speak up. We cannot say what we think, what we want, because it's just so like, there's, I don't know how to put it in words. It's, you don't have that right, you know, and it would be so hard to break down machismo when we come from those type of cultures, like they're teaching that, you know, women are only there to cook, to clean, and to have kids and to take care of the kids. That's it. They're not allowed to have education. They're not allowed to work. They're not allowed to think. They're not allowed to be smart. And issues. It can be when I came here with my dad. He didn't thought about education. He was like, "No, you come here to work." So I was 14 working in two jobs, and I was like, "Okay, Dad, we're in different country. That was my first time speaking up to the man that I haven't seen for years. That was my father. And my first time, they said, like, no, I don't want to work. I want to go to school. But when you're a child and you have to follow your parents, you know, orders and rules. So he put me to work in two jobs. And I was 14. And I had that dream to go to school, but that didn't happen until he came back to Honduras and I entered in the foster care system.
Jonathan.
You know, I'd also like to say that it's not fun to be a man in these countries, because the other side of the machismo, which is so terrible and destructive for women, girls, and relationships, is the fact that the men have to prove themselves in the eyes of other men in this very, very violent way. There's a story in our book by a young man named Josue, who idolized his father, and his father picked coconuts, and he followed him around and wanted to be like his father. And his father was a really genuinely good man. And then the kids Josue grew up with were inducted into the gangs. These classmates of his, when they turned 11 and 12, some of them gravitated toward the gangs. And in the gang, to prove yourself, you have to commit a violent act. And so Josue didn't go that path. He wanted to be like his dad. His father was illiterate. He didn't want to go to school either. He just wanted to pick coconuts, and it was a going business. But when the gangs came in, his former friends, not only did they demand protection money from his father's family, which killed the business, but they also said, "You've got to join the gang." And he said, "I don't want to join the gang." They slipped a note under the door threatening the family. So his father, who loved his son so much, paid a coyote, a people smuggler, to bring his son away from there to the United States. And then when he was here delivering furniture, he got a message that your father's been killed by the same gang. So if you stand up to the gangs, the consequences are really, really horrible. They'll also kidnap your daughter. And so the gangs have spread here. The fact is that this is not just the terrible acts of men against women, boys against girls, but it's something that's feeding an internal struggle that is hurting everybody.
And for for example, when I was a little girl, I saw my stepfather, physical abuse my mom. So you grow up seeing those images, and it's so hard for me. It's been really hard to step up and say I'm worth it. I can make my own decisions. I don't want to be like my mom. I don't want a man to hit me, and disrespectfully for that. But it's not easy, because you have those memories as a child, and. Yeah, and when you live in a family of violence, where there's a lot of violence inside, a lot of alcohol issues, so it's really hard to, when you grow up, you're going to, step up for yourself.
Soledad Castillo left Tegucigalpa, Honduras, when she was just 14 to come to the United States. She has since graduated from San Francisco State University. We will talk more about her journey, what happened when she got here, what she's doing now. Jonathan Friedman is co-editor of the incredible book Solido Solida, Crossing Borders with Youth Refugee from Central America. Jonathan is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are joined by Jonathan Friedman, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and mentor with more than 30 years of reporting experience in Central America, Mexico, and the U.S. border. He is co-editor with Stephen Mayers of the incredible book, Solido Solida, Crossing Borders with Youth Refugees from Central America. Soledad Castillo tells her story in the book. She crossed the border at age 14. She left her hometown, Tegucigalpa, Honduras, to come to the United States. She is now a graduate of San Francisco State University. You know, during the break, we were just talking about, you know, how it's so important to talk about the nuances, the complexities, like talking about the machismo culture mm-hmm. in Central America. And then also, Jonathan, giving some historical context to all of that, because it's important to talk about both and make the connections. And I feel like sometimes people are uncomfortable talking about the machismo because you don't want stereotypes, right, mm-hmm. that we hear a lot in the media, especially from this administration. But in respect to Soledad and other young people, it's important to go there. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I'm pretty 100% sure there's a lot of people there that, you know, go through the same, like, being like physical abuse in their house because of this type of machismo that they have, you know, family members, their partners in their house, and it is so scary to talk about because, you know, you're putting these stereotypes too, but you're putting, you know, the name of their family, and you know, we have that oh no, you don't talk about your family, mm-hmm. doesn't matter if it is good or bad, you don't talk about them, you know. And it is so scary, you know, for us to really tell, like, exactly what's going on, you know, in those houses.
I think one thing I'd like to add to this, and where we're looking for hope and what can be done, is the general idea of protecting children. Child protection. It's really, really terrible that when, after all these arduous, terrible things, they come to our borders, and our government is tearing children out of the mother's arms. Mm-hmm. But protecting children is a concept that is apolitical. It has nothing right or left or anything about it. It's just the idea of how do you protect young children mm-hmm. from each other, from older children? How do you create conditions in which parents can protect their children from the neighbors? And how do you create conditions where a woman who's being abused and watching her children being abandoned or abused can go somewhere to get help, to find support to defend the children, and laws that prevent the abuse of children that are enforced? Most of the laws, as I see it, of course, I'm just a journalist, but as I see it, are how do we protect property? How do we protect the government? How do we protect business? Not how do we protect children? And I think one of the wonderful aspects we've been talking about, the terrible aspects of the United States interventionism, but when many of these stories, when the young people came to the United States, they were helped by our culture. That has social workers, psychologists, mm-hmm. teachers, and volunteers who connect one-on-one with a young person mm-hmm. and offer them respect, a listening ear. You can do it. These healing and wonderful aspects of our culture, I think, are very valuable. And when people are talking about what mm-hmm. the United States can do, it's not arming military governments. It's not blockading countries. if we could spread more of these healing professions and actions, then I think we could begin protecting children. And once you begin protecting children, they can age and they don't have to just join a gang in order to feel like they are valuable, or just, or they don't just have to succumb and have a baby at age 14 to feel like, well, now I'm a mother. So I think there's a lot of things we could do through NGOs, non-government agencies, and volunteers to turn the tide toward healing and protecting rather than repressing and destroying.
Yeah. And it's in our community in Honduras, there's none of the resources. Like, there's, if you're, there's nothing. It's just so, like, the poverty there is huge that you're really not going to find any help, you know? And yeah, and so a lot of children live with that trauma.
Mm. Soledad, what do you think is the most effective thing people can do? I love that in the book, Solido, Solida, there is a section called 10 Things You Can Do.
Mm-hmm. So first, as Jonathan has mentioned in the other conference, you know, to support other organizations that are helping immigrants. Casa de las Madres, so there's many organizations who are, you know, and support immigrants. And also, listen to other people's story. You don't know how much that can help, you know. So because we only talk about, so if I'm talking, so people know about immigration, whatever the news tell them, but they actually don't take the time to really sit down with one of them and see, okay, tell me about your life. Mm-hmm. How was your life there? What are your goals? What are your aspirations? And really get to know people, you know, like stop more like, we need to start like seeing immigrants as a human still, not only as a political debate.
You know, this book is all about borders and boundaries, borders being crossed, boundaries being violated. And I think metaphorically, there's sort of a border of fear for people who are listening now to want to read this book. I don't want to have to go into these terrible, horrible things. I don't want to hear all the suffering. I just want to block it out. Well, that's a natural human thing. But there is love in this book. There is joy in this book. There are people who are overcoming things in this book, people who take risks and who some of the risks turn out badly. Well, not all the stories have happy endings. But risk takers are noble people. And so I think the barriers to reading these stories perpetuate this isolationism, isolating ourselves from other human stories. And you'll find yourself in these stories. Each of us comes from families where there are disagreements and difficulties. And the love, one of the things I notice as an outsider when I'm dealing with Latin Americans is that very, very strong family ties. Mm. Very, very strong families. And that's intergenerational. The role of grandparents can be so, as a theme in this book, the role of grandparents, even though they may die early, taking that parental role when one of the parents has left the country, left Central America to work for a better living in the United States. So I think that what I'm pleading for is people to give this book a chance. No, don't just even buy it and just say you have it, but read one of the stories.
And that we show resilient, you know. And I have a thing I say that in the previous time that I came here, we know we are seen as, you know, criminals, rapists, and everything. But I've been here more than 10 years, and I don't have any criminal records. And I've been doing everything that I can, you know, to do good, to help my community, too. And I want people to get to know those people, you know, those type of immigrants, you know, like, we are not criminals, we are not rapists. So I want them to know, like, who we really are.
Soledad, Castillo tells her story in the book Solito, Solita, which means alone, alone, crossing borders with youth refugees from Central America. She left Tegucigalpa, Honduras when she was just 14. She has since graduated from San Francisco State University. Jonathan Friedman is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He's co-editor of Solito, Solita. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. If you have any questions for Soledad or Jonathan, if you have a refugee story you'd like to share, or if you have any thoughts about what we can do to support young refugees or any questions, we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Brenda in Berkeley. Hi, Brenda. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Is that me? It's Brenda.
Brenda, yes. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for the show. I wanted to ask if either of your guests has could tell us about the 2009 coup in Honduras. I remember that. And I remember people saying that the CIA was involved. I'm sure they were involved in other coups, but I don't know. Can you comment on that?
Well, thank you for the question. This is Jonathan. What I really recommend is you read The Long Honduran Night by Dana Frank, who's an emeritus professor from UC Santa Cruz. And she was very involved as an academic and also as an advocate for peace in the whole period leading up to the coup and what happened since. What's very interesting, I've just been reading this book, which is by Dana Frank, is that women play a large role in the resistance in Honduras. Women who are leaders of labor unions, and it's very interesting that at the same time you have the repression and the military repression that was supported by the United States. The United States essentially supported this coup to take over a government from an elected president and put in a dictator. That the resistance to this was often led by women who were active in banana and other kinds of industrialized work, and that these women marched in the streets, and that the government won. The repression came down hard. It was supported covertly by the United States. But at the same time, there are things to build on in a country like Honduras where people feel community ties and labor union ties. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I do think if you take a look at that book, it's very, very detailed.
We had Dana Frank on the show back in December talking about her book, The Long Honduran Night. And it's worth noting that this happened under the Obama administration. And she's got some damning quotes in her book from Hillary Clinton. So thank you so much for calling. And you can find that interview online at kalw.org. The book is The Long Honduran Night by Dana Frank. Thank you. Let's go next to Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. This is a painful discussion to listen to for two reasons. One, because I'm very, very mindful of the damage that's being done to children and families. But I can't let it go on without there being some clarity of United States American history. I'm 72 years old. I have worked in psychiatric hospitals for children. I have worked in juvenile courts. I have worked in foster care. I have worked throughout the system. I practiced law. I was a guardian ad litem. This country has never cared about children. I simply want that to be known. So for us to try and frame ourselves as the shining city on the hill that does care about children, that is so different from every other. In your last caller, you were talking about how the United States has meddled, not just in Honduras, but in every country. So we're exercised about how the Russians have tried some psyops to get people to change their minds. And that's not an issue that should go unnoticed, but it's something we've done throughout history. And it wasn't just Obama. It's been in every single administration we felt that we had a righteousness, a right to meddle in other people's country and undermine their culture and their societies in the name of whatever, mostly oil, but we've called it democracy. That's certainly what Cheney did in Iraq and elsewhere. I don't want to pontificate, but from the time that we took children out of cities and separated them from their families or orphans and sent them off in trains to farms in Iowa and Kansas to be effectively servants, back in the late 19th century up to the present time, our foster care system, our educational system, shows that we simply don't care about children.
Well, thank you, Robert. I'll take it back a little more, because unfortunately, when we talk about the separation of children, some people bring this up, but more people need to. This country separated Native children, forcibly took Native children from their families. It happened to my own great-grandmother and my own grandfather. Huh. Jonathan?
Well, first of all, I want to commend you for all the positive things you've done in your own career to protect and help children. And I didn't mean to be superficial in saying that the United States has the answers for how to treat children. But I do think that, for example, I volunteer at a juvenile hall, and within the juvenile hall, there are people who are teaching classes and getting people to want to go to college. Many years ago, I wrote a book called From Cradle to Grave, The Human Face of Poverty in America. And that book was all focused on what positive programs there do exist for children that enable people to overcome the challenges of every stage of their life. And, you know, the book came out exactly when Newt Gingrich did his contract on America. Mm-hmm. And I remember being on late night radio shows and things and talking about wonderful programs that did help children, and people calling in and say, well, why don't we just put them all in orphanages? And so there is this duality within the United States, these push and pull forces. But I do think that there are so many good things that go neglected, and there's so much focus on just the horribleness and how everything repeats itself and nothing can be done, that it puts people in a cynical mood. And I look at Soledad sitting right across from me. Yesterday was her first day of work back from New York. She was helping families reconnect with people in prisons. And I looked at her this morning, and her voice was small. And I said, what's going on? And she says, well, I had a really hard day yesterday. It was a lot of work piled on me. And look what she's doing. She's giving back. Mm. So call me Pollyanna, but I do believe that these forces of healing and help and connection can overcome and have and will overcome some of the dark sides.
Mm. Well, and Soledad, I mean, I hope people get this book and read all these stories. Just a few other things about your journey. When you got on a bus to go from Honduras to Guatemala, you write about how there were gangs on board. One guy took out a gun. They put a gun to your head, telling you to give all your money. You didn't have money. They took your pants off. You say you don't remember their faces, but you remember their hands. I mean, that was a tragic story. And then you write also about being placed in foster care in the United States, and one of the homes just didn't feed you.
Yes, I ended up several times at the hospital because I wasn't feeding. I was just eating once a day. And, you know, by then I didn't speak any English at all. I was just arriving to the United States, so I didn't know how the foster care system worked. So I didn't, and my social worker didn't speak Spanish, so I didn't have no one to go to. So I was in that home for 6 months.
Did anyone check in on you?
No, when the social worker went to the house and checked, she would always ask questions to the mom, but never to me. So never ask me how you're doing, how is everything going. So I was the housekeeping there. I wasn't eating at all. So it was a really, really bad experience.
Wow. Well, and here you are today. We only have a couple minutes. You have graduated from San Francisco State University. And again, Soledad goes into great detail in her section of Solido, Solida. Tell us what kind of work you're doing right now.
Yes. So I had to learn English from the beginning, taking ESL classes. I graduated from City College with honors. I transferred to San Francisco State, and I graduated last year with a BA in Liberal Studies and Criminal Justice. Now I work for Community Work West, which is a nonprofit. I am the Human Services Agency Coordinator with One Family. I help parents who have an open CPS case to reunify with their children.
Wow.
So I supervise CPS visits.
Mm. And when you see what's happening with young immigrants, especially those, well, all of them, but those also who are separated from their families, I read in the intro about three young people who died in U.S. custody. What goes through your mind when you hear these stories?
Devastating. It's really sad. You know, I went to the borders when the caravans were coming, and just seeing, you know, a lot of children, you know, being so close to their dreams, but there's a wall that separated them, and being separated from some of the children come. There are so many children who come without their moms too, and can you imagine the pain of their moms not seeing their children again? It's just, yeah, imaginable.
Kind of thoughts,
just
Jonathan?
Wanted to say one thing about the caravans.
Yeah.
And the really very powerful message, I think, that comes out of our book, which we're calling From Solito Alone, From Solito to Solidarity. Mm-hmm. The caravans were not organized as an invasion. They were organized by people who wanted to call attention to the plight of desperately poor families with children. Mm-hmm. And when we saw them come into Tijuana the first day, they were sick. Their feet were ragged.
Mm-hmm.
Some were shoeless. They had been walking for hundreds and hundreds of miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like a Martin Luther King protest march. It was peaceful. It was not aggressive. And they were wanting to draw attention to the plight of families and children. So that was taken as a political message exactly wrong by the administration, that saw them as an invading force, brought 5,000 troops, helicopters circling, tear gas. And that kind of abuse is internalized, not only in the countries we have abused, but within our own country.
Jonathan Friedman is co-editor of Solido, Solida, Crossing Borders with Youth Refugees from Central America. Soledad Castillo's story is one of the 15 in the book. She is a graduate of San Francisco State, doing really incredible work today. She's originally from Tegucigalpa, Honduras. She crossed the border at age 14. Jonathan and Soledad, thank you again for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
We're really honored to be interviewed by you. Thank you.
We're honored to have both of you. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call.